Heather McDonald has got the juicy scoop. When you're on the road, when you're on the go, Juicy Scoop is the show to know. She talks Hollywood tales, her real life Mr. Sigmund serial data, and serial sister, you'll be addicted and addicted fast to the number one tabloid real life podcast. Listen in, listen up. Woo, woo. Heather McDonald. Juicy Scoop.
Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I hope you're getting all ready for Christmas. Well, I've got two great interviews with you. Let's start with the first one. And this is really juicy and really important. Again, it's a little bit of a departure from what I do, but I find that it's so interesting. And I knew you guys would be intrigued by it. But I have a detective and an LAPD officer here to talk about this crazy crime spree and the smash and go grabs and all of it that unfortunately has really been plaguing Los Angeles as well as many other cities, but we're going to focus on LA and really why it's happening. Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I have a returning guest, Detective Jim McSorley. He was on the episode where we talked about the Netflix documentary about the Cecil Hotel. And now I'm here because I've mentioned this a few times on Juicy Scoop, and the LA crime wave is just getting more and more insane. I have so many questions, and I'm like, I know you. You came to see my stand-up. We're friends, Jim.
Yes.
And then I saw
the beach.
And you know the new head of the police department in Beverly Hills.
Yes.
I saw that you like took a photo with him.
Great. Former boss of mine. Really,
he's kind of a good-looking guy. I mean, I'm like, if you're going to cast like the head of a Beverly, I'm like, was he cast? Like, this is kind of funny.
I mean, it's perfect for Beverly Hills. I mean, he's a spectacular guy, a great cop, looks awesome. Yeah,
he's
the whole package.
I pulled this up, and he said, "We will do everything we can to put you in jail." The Beverly Hills Police Chief continues to push back on the crime spree. So I've talked a little bit about this. You guys know about the smash and grabs. I call them the grab and goes, but they're really a smash and grab. But some of them, they don't even have to smash it. They just are taking it. And like, why don't you just kind of say, what is happening? What are other cops? What is everybody talking about? Like, because every day there's something new.
Right, right. Well, it's a mixture of things. These things have always happened. It's just the frequency of them. So there have always been these crews of mostly gang members that from certain parts of L.A. that they're kind of like commuter criminals that'll come to target-rich environments such as, you know, Beverly Hills, the Hollywood Hills up here in the valley south of Ventura Boulevard, and it's a free-for-all. And so that always happened, but what we're seeing in this post-George Floyd pandemic era is – people are being arrested by police departments, Beverly Hills, L.A., all the big agencies, but they're being released upon being arrested. So,
and why is that?
So once the pandemic kicked off, the powers that be, the superior court judge system, are the ones that set these bail schedules in L.A. So say my team and I, we arrest all these apex predators. We arrest them.
What does apex mean?
Just the tip of the spear of all these the guys really putting in work out there of violent felony crimes.
Oh, okay.
Just the people out there that are just – there's no – the point of no return. Professional criminals, career criminals, if
okay.
you be. So they're out there and we arrest them. They go to jail. But due to these judges' decisions of saying that we have to ease the population in jails and prisons, they have to be released. Evidently, it's safer for the pandemic in their eyes of them being on the streets than them being in jail. Which really doesn't
because of COVID?
Right. They think
– because they – okay, but now that – okay, first of all
– it's insane. You can't digest it. I know.
Can they not?
It doesn't make sense.
I also have a question. Do they vaccinate the people in jails? Is that like a they have to be vaccinated?
No.
So they don't have to be vaccinated, but you have to be vaccinated.
The people that work there have to be.
Okay, but the criminals don't have to be.
No.
Okay. But if you want to eat inside of a restaurant in L.A.,
yes.
then you have to be vaccinated.
Yes, you have to come in looking like a knight in shining armor, this whole thing, and everyone has to wear like welding
right.
masks and everything. You see poor wait staff that have to wear all this.
Yeah. So when – now that that is done, like now that – I'm saying it is kind of done because I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, even the people that are getting the breakthrough cases, they're doing great. They're doing fine. They don't even know they have it. They only know they have it is because they had to be tested every other day because they're on a TV show. Otherwise, I'm sorry, I bet people have it and don't know they have it.
Sure.
But we're not sick because we were vaccinated and we're healthy. So whatever. But these people know they have it. So, okay. So then that happened. And then what was the – so they get like the poor woman that was murdered in Beverly Hills.
Right.
That guy was a career criminal.
Absolutely.
And what was the story behind that? Was it just like he just went into a fancy home in Beverly Hills? Or did he know that she was there? Like, I don't understand how she got killed. Do you know anything?
Well, it's interesting because from what I heard was he was armed with a rifle. Most of these guys that we encounter with will have a handgun on them. And it's, you know, kind of self-defense for them in case they get interrupted by security or a homeowner. This guy had a rifle, which shows how brazen the crime was. To carry a rifle, it's very cumbersome. So you have to have a sling or you're going to have to carry it. So if you're going in there with a rifle and you're going to be stealing things, it's not a well-thought-out crime. So you could see the type of individual that you're dealing with, someone that's disorganized, that doesn't have his act together, or even as a criminal. And then after he killed that person, he commits another burglary.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, that's how they caught him.
Okay,
Hollywood Hills.
And what did he take from that house?
I didn't really get the granular details on that. But so he kills that poor lady and then commits another burglary, home invasion type of thing in the Hollywood Hills. So usually after you kill somebody, that's a big thing, obviously, that you're going to lay low after that because everyone's going to be out and about looking for you and you're drawing a lot of attention to you. Not to mind the fact that, hey, I just killed someone, but that just shows the mentality of someone's like, all right, I killed someone, so whatever. You and I would be, you know.
So then he goes back to
the. Yeah, it's just like business as usual.
So he goes to another house.
Yeah, let me do it again.
The same night?
Same night.
And how did they catch him? How so that he didn't kill anyone at that next house?
No, he shot himself.
By accident.
Right. Right. Which is kind of common. These guys that we're dealing with aren't the brightest. We're not catching, we're dealing with dumb people out there that are doing dumb things.
Oh.
So he shot himself and then. The police department that arrested him put two and two together and linked those two crimes up. So you're dealing with people that would normally be in prison.
That person.
Hardened people.
So that guy was a criminal that was let out early.
Yeah, they're letting people out that to get to prison now, it's a long road. Before it's very short. But to get to prison now, they...
Is it harder to get into prison than Harvard at this point?
It really is, right? Because now, was it no SATs and all the dumbing down all the requirements now for all these places?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not only is it hard to get in prison, it's easy to get out. So they're letting everyone out now under this umbrella of COVID. Get people out, you know, depopulate the prisons.
But why? So they only want to depopulate it because of COVID? Or is it really like overcrowding?
Is that in the whole social justice reform? So we're in the middle of this experiment. And what happens when you start with experiments in the lab, things blow up. That's what we're dealing with is cities that are turning into non-permissive environments.
So the social experiment was defunding the police.
That's part of it.
Having like social workers go instead of police officers. And so do we have less police officers than we did before the pandemic?
Oh, without a doubt.
Because people quit or because we had to let people go?
Well, it's a whole combination. Like my age bracket, I'm 48, so that's when people start thinking about retirement. So like 48 to like 55 is the usual, but that amplified it. All this, all the riots and all the defund this and demoralization.
So people
are saying, you know what,
I've
had enough, I'm leaving. So you have a combination of that and the pipeline to get new people into the police academy is you know, what kid in their 20s, they were all about the likes. And what do you see on social media towards my people? It's the dislikes. So
what about all the military that is coming home from the Middle East? Shouldn't they be like heavily recruited?
Yeah, that was always a pipeline to the police department. But I mean, they're like anyone else. They see what's going on as far as, you know, of being what the police are thought of nowadays.
Yeah.
So, you know, the smart kids, they're like, let me think of something else. I mean, we're still getting a population like that, but it seems like it's being minimalized.
Mm. I know. That's what I'm scared. You know, it's like, and I think it's very interesting because I'm like, all these rich people in LA, they're just hiring private security to go out to dinner with them. They have private bodyguards. They have people that drive their cars that are, you know, have concealed weapons. They have their own gated houses and communities. They have private for everything.
Yes.
And it's like, well, what about the person that just wants to have, you know, a little house party and they live in a normal house? They're like, you know, like I went out the other night and I wanted to drive my car.
I was going to say, I'm worried about you when I see you go out. I see all these flashy purses and pocketbooks and all that. I'm like, no, Heather, just put on a sweatsuit. That's fine.
Okay. So I did go to West Hollywood and right. I, you know, was with my gay friends in West Hollywood. We went to the Improv. And I wanted to drive my car. I didn't want to drink. And I just, like, wanted to have my car in case I was like, okay, this wasn't as fun as I thought or whatever. And I did – I mean, I will not, like, leave my wedding rings and stuff home. But, like, I didn't wear, like, my watch or my bracelet. And I didn't wear, like, anything like a necklace. And but then I was like, I don't want to drive my car because they're following you home.
Right.
And I actually feel like – Uber is safer. I mean, I'm in a car with an Uber that's, yeah, people have gotten attacked by Uber people, but I think that's much less likely to happen. You're in the back seat, they're tracking you, your car, mm-hmm. your phone is tracking you, all this. Because I'm like, come home to my house. I mean, I don't know. So coincidentally, then not coincidentally, but just last night, the Sagebrush Cantina, which is in Calabasas, this couple that was in a Porsche were going there at like 11 p.m. You know, that's like been around forever. Have you ever been to the Sagebrush Cantina?
Of course, yeah.
It's like a very fun place, especially in the summer. But, you know, they always have music and stuff. Sunday's a big day. And they pulled up into the valet and an SUV came right after that, right behind them and had the gun on the guy. And he did use the gun and pistol whipped him and hit him and his head was bleeding. And the woman tried to hold on to her purse. I would never do that. He took the purse. They took the purse. So they're gone. And then just happened at the Costco in Westlake.
Right.
And it's just, I am conscious of it. You know, like we were Good. At a thing last night and, you know, we couldn't find our car in the lot of like we were at the El Capitan for this Ben Affleck thing. And, you know, that whole shopping mall there, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know. And Peter and I couldn't remember where we did the car thing. And I'm like, well, this could be fucking scary right now. Like, if I was alone, I would be terrified.
Yes.
And so it's like, what? So I have friends that have never owned guns, never wanted a gun, that are buying guns.
So what you're saying is you're going to get the pink lock that they had now offer,
right? I am personally, I still don't want one because I just don't feel comfortable with it. But my neighbor across the street and his son have guns and are experienced. And I'm like, and he's like, you should get it. I'm like, I'll just run to your house. Like, I just still don't want it because of all the other things that could happen. Like, then someone breaks in mm-hmm. and you use it. And then what happens? Okay, what happens in LA if, because my friend who was taking the test to get a gun, she said, there's all these interesting things. Like, they say, if someone comes in with a gun to steal from you and you shoot them, you will be in trouble only if they physically have attacked you first. Then you can shoot them. Otherwise, you cannot shoot them.
Right. Well, let me just backtrack a little bit. When you talk about purchasing a gun, it's kind of like – that's just step one. It's kind of like a 60-year-old kid buying him a Formula One race car. Oh, you could drive. You're of age. No. You need lessons. You
right,
need
of course.
Experience
yeah.
to build up to that. So many people just think it's a shortcut to safety. Here, buy this gun, you're going to be safe. That's below the bare minimum. You need so much training, not only for
the
mechanics.
Thing. I mean, that's the thing with me. Like, I don't feel comfortable with it. I'm like, I literally don't know how to
sure.
work like several of the remotes at the house. Okay, like I have to call. I have to have Drake help me. And I'm like, I just don't think I'm the person that should be having a gun and just knowing that the gun's in the house and accidentals, deaths and all that stuff. But then also like that, like something accidentally happening or being mm-hmm. so scared and so paranoid that then someone walks in and you do kill a loved one because you thought they were still out of town until Friday or whatever and they didn't want to wake you up and they come home a day early. And then I'm sure you've heard of those type of things
Absolutely.
Happening.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not only the mechanics of the physicality of the
yeah.
the weapon system, it's also the mindset. of when you're confronted with that situation, can you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys, you know, that I work with that were presented with that scenario, and it was difficult for them to overcome that, and they reacted like they weren't trained. So, you know, at some of the highest level, you have people that, you know, piss backwards, excuse my French. So a civilian has the bare minimum knowledge of a weapon or has never been in that situation. It could be deadly. So, yeah, the message out there, yeah, if you want to get a gun, that's step one. There's so many more steps after that. So there's people out there to do the training, and you get that mindset to overcome that, but it's a long road. So, and then the legal aspect, like you said,
right.
So you have to know how to use it, have the mindset, and know what the legal ramifications are and what aren't. What
like
can you
one
can
of the things
do?
She said is that it says you cannot shoot someone in the back of them.
Right.
But she's like, well, what if they were attacking your kid?
Right. Well, it has to be in defense of your life or someone else's.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then the threshold is like serious bodily injury.
Okay.
So, you know, if someone has a glass or whatever, and they're like, I'm going to throw this at you, just something stupid, a mug or whatever. You're like, all right, can that really cause serious bodily injury? You know, it depends. Now, if someone has a baseball bat, yes, that's good to go. Someone has a gun, of course. So you have to know what the threshold is. And then yes, if someone's shooting in the back, if someone's attacking your employee, and the only target they're presenting is the back, yes, you can shoot someone in the back. Which you're defending that other person's life. So there's all these scenarios that run through people's mind, and misconceptions and falsehoods that that can make or break someone's freedom. So you have to really educate yourself on that.
Now with the grab and goes, these people that appear to be young, but of course they have their masks. That's the other thing I was going to say. You know, a few years ago, people were saying, you know, I don't know if there's rules or not. But there was kind of a lot of controversy over people that would cover their face because of, you know, being Muslim or like, you know, and they're like, they shouldn't be allowed to cover their face, this before COVID, because we can't see them in surveillance cameras and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Or well, hooded sweatshirts.
Yeah. Now everybody has the masks.
Yes.
Because they tell us we have to wear a mask. Do you think that's also added to how easy the crime is? Because it's not, you're not suspicious of someone walking in wearing a mask because everyone's wearing a mask.
Well, that and it presents like a cloak of anonymity and
right.
Kind of like a riot. People that engage in a riot normally wouldn't do those things, but they feel like they're anonymous when there's so many people around them. It just feels like, all right, everyone's doing this. This is what I'm going to do too.
Yeah.
So when you have that mask on, it ups the ante of I can get away with this.
Right.
So like, but it's interesting when you talk about the whole mask and like the hooded sweatshirt thing. Like before the pandemic, certain places in Europe, like up in the north of Ireland, you can't walk into a convenience store with a hooded sweatshirt or some type of ski mask or whatever due to, you know, types of crimes that was a predicate to. So same thing with these now, like you said, with the mask now, so that you have to have a mask on. So that's further making our job harder for apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's another ticker. So like I said, these things have always happened, but it's all these little ticks going aside of that amplifying it.
Yeah.
And then also the media plays a big part in it. It's kind of like, do you remember when the whole celebrity swatting thing was going on?
What do you mean?
There was this term called swatting, which someone would do false 911 calls to certain celebrities' houses in the Hollywood Hills or...
No, I didn't really know about this.
Remember that? Yeah.
No. So what was this?
So there's a way that you could do it either, you know, primitive style over the phone or over the... VoIP, like voice over internet protocols.
Okay.
And you can call 911 and say, hey, I'm being held hostage, you know, say Ben Affleck's house or whatever. And then the police would show up and we'd have to drag everyone out of the house, clear the house to see what would happen. So it would be a big to do.
And it was just a prank?
And it was a prank, but it was against, you know, high profile people. So of course it would make the news. So all these people that were seeking attention, seeing it on the news, why not do it? You know, it's what kids do or people that are deranged, let's do it. And so it increased. So I think this, how it's being portrayed in the media, and it's all over social media, and gangsters like anyone else, everyone has a phone, everyone's looking at sort of the same material, and they're seeing this, and they're like, why not me? Why can't we do this? So that's adding fuel to the fire. So, which is an interesting thing in regard to the swatting. a lot of the police departments, when these things would happen, they would publicize it, put a press release, anything high profile, because the news is going to call up, hey, what happened with Ben Affleck? All right, you put out a press release so we don't have to deal, answer every question. But a tactic they used was to stop issuing press releases, not talking about it. And incredibly, a huge amount of those incidents went down. So I don't know if that's something they want to use on this, maybe. It's that fine line of educating the public and then maybe over-educating and publicizing is too much. Mm. So it's a gray area, which is something to consider or not. Just it's an interesting phenomenon, though, that adds to bringing fuel to the fire.
Well, I mean, I think I do want it, advertised and out there, because I want people to be like, we want more police. Mm-hmm. We want them to know that they're valued. We want them. And, just because people weren't walking in the streets for the police, doesn't mean that there weren't all these other – but you couldn't be vocal, otherwise you look like – especially in Hollywood. You had to say a certain thing.
Yeah, you had you had to, wave the flag for whatever community you're in.
Yeah, so it's like you just were like, okay, but now I feel like now everybody's like, okay, well, this is kind of scary. This is pretty terrifying. And I do, but you said they were always going wealthier neighborhoods. I feel like they weren't. All of a sudden they just thought, why don't we just go into some neighborhood that's have their guards down and are like,
well, there's nothing. If you're looking at lower income neighborhoods, the hood, there's nothing really to steal. So where am I going to get the best, the high priced dollars, high priced goods? I'm going to go to Beverly Hills. I'm going to go to Hollywood Hills.
And then, with the label conscious stealing, yes. Has that just why do you think that has skyrocketed? Just because of Instagram, where everybody's showing off their wealth all the time, that then people that normally would have never thought to own a Louis Vuitton bag or want a Louis Vuitton bag, it's all about, I want a Louis Vuitton for my 16th birthday. It's just
that, and the high price sneakers and all that. Yeah. That whole game has skyrocketed all these, smash and grabs and burglaries or what have you, that thirst for materialism and that label to, it was one thing before when we were growing up is to wear it, and now it's just to show it. The people have vaults in the house of just sneakers that they haven't even worn, but they have to show it.
Right.
Which is crazy. That's not how we grew up. Yeah. To show a little quick video and then get that clout. So the younger generation that's coming up, they want to wear it, but they also have to show it. And that includes gangsters.
And so this is what I fear is going to happen. I think there's going to be a grab and go, and it's going to be, young kids that maybe are not career criminals that are just like, why not us? Mm-hmm. We want to have a good TikTok closet, and some guy or girl that is a citizen that has a concealed weapon is going to take that opportunity to be Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to be another frickin' horrible race war thing.
I mean, it's just we're always one incident away from a riot nowadays, which is pretty scary. And that's all it could take is one incident, one bullet.
And they go, why are the security guards helping? I'm like, that's not the security guard's job. And I know people that work in these stores, and they go, if anything happens, just stand back. Don't try to save anything. Don't try to be a hero, because we don't want you getting hurt. We don't want the customers getting hurt. So there's that. But then what I said is nobody's thinking about just the hardworking people that are working there, that they finally got all their purses in. They called their best, customers, the customers coming tomorrow, and now they're cleaned out, and now they're out a good commission, which is a huge part of their salary. And it's so it's just frustrating when people are
Well, that and the psychological trauma of being a victim.
Totally.
Of having a gun in your face or just being in that environment of impending doom of all these people that are in these high-priced stores. We're next, that feeling. That's a horrible way to go to work.
I mean,
you come to work, you don't have to think about that.
I went to Neiman's last week, and I was like,
you're getting my Christmas gift?
Yes.
Yes.
It's like, what can I get for Jim? but I was like, I want to get, a dress or something for a party. And I was like, I want to go to Neiman's. They have better stuff. No offense to Nordstrom. But I do love my girl Ellen at Nordstrom. Okay, anyway. So I was like, Heather, what are you doing? You shouldn't be going to the store. But then I saw the LAPD was right in front. So then I was like, all right, I can go in. So, and then right when I walked in, I saw this guy plain clothes and I could see his gun in his jacket. So I was like, okay. But they had no purses. They had no inventory as far as like the stuff on the first floor. Do you think they'll change it so that they don't have that stuff on the first floor anymore and move it to like the third floor?
Yeah, it's like going, you know, where certain stores have the razors and everything else behind, you know, cabinets and buried somewhere. I mean, it's a horrible way to live. It's kind of like the kind of pushing the lifestyle of like when you go overseas and to like a non-permissive type of city where like, all right, dress down, don't wear anything flashy, don't say you're an American, be the gray man. And if you're at a store, there's someone with a rifle out front. And if you need something, it's in the vault. That's where it's slowly being pushed to. Which
oh my
is
God, it's so
horrendous.
True. I remember about 20 years ago or so, I went to the Galapagos Islands, and I can't remember the city we were at before we went on the boat to go to the Galapagos Islands, but like walked around and I was just like, they were just, and it was like shortly after 9/11. So I was kind of like, oh my God. But it was just, yeah, just guys right everywhere, just like as you're walking around like on the pier.
Yeah, just normal, you know, like soldiers outside.
That is so depressing.
It's depressing. So it's an easy fix. But unfortunately, Americans, we always have to learn the hard way where the pendulum has to swing the other way. But the pendulum now is like a wrecking ball. It's going to go the other way, but it's going to wreck. It's going to wreck, make some damage in its way. And we don't need that. I mean, as we see, well, truly innocent people getting hurt out there. And what's going to take is, like you said, a high profile incident, some a judge's daughter or something high profile with like, all right, finally enough's enough. And it seems like we're getting there, but it's at what cost?
And, you know, so, I mean, I had a friend and her place was broken into, and she's like, well, you know, they stole her Ring camera. So she wasn't sure. And she called 911 and they never came. And she was like, she goes, I guess I wasn't acting crazy enough on the phone, but she's a single mom and she was trying to calm down her 9-year-old daughter. So she was like, well, you know, and it was like, but then to the 911, it's not going to take precedence over. And it's like, what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to lie about what it is? You're just like, I just need someone to come.
Right.
But I mean, I get it. If 50 people are calling and there's only 30 cops to go places, 20 people are not going to be seen.
Right. It's like the emergency room, the guy that comes in with a broken arm or the stab wound or, you know, he just got electrocuted, right? There's a certain pecking order.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with 911, unfortunately. But to that person that it's never happened before and the home was violated, that goes to the top of the list. So they're further traumatized by the system of lack of resources.
So this this guy, the DA, he says he's sticking. This is Garcon. He says he's sticking to his plan. He says it's working. And what is the $950 thing? Explain that to the everyone.
Yes, that is the threshold for filing considerations, and that makes it a felony or a misdemeanor. Which now it doesn't really make a difference. Before, if it was a misdemeanor, pre-pandemic, if you didn't have any outstanding warrants or what have you, you'd get you'd be released on your own recognizance if you had ID or whatever. So, which means you go to court in about a month or so, and then you get probation. If it was a felony, you'd get a set bail, whatever it was, $10,000, $20,000, based on your record and what you stole and what have you. You'd go to jail, and then if you could make bail, which a lot of people can't. Then they stay there until they go to court. Mm-hmm. And then the court determines if they're going to get released or remanded to go to trial and what have you. So that's when they restructured, going through this whole social reform, restructuring all these laws where it upped the ante for the price, the threshold to make it a felony or not. So that's at $950 you keep hearing about is anything over that's a felony. But now it doesn't really make a difference because a felony or misdemeanor, you're being released no matter what. So unless it's a it's a murder or rape, those are still keepers. You're still getting you're going to stay in jail until you go to court. Everything else is here's a date to come to court in 6 months sometimes. And then you get caught again next week. Here's another date to go to court. And then another. I mean, these people are getting myself personally, I've arrested same people month after month for the same type of crime. So, you know, it's like a kid, you know, you kid steals a candy in the house or whatever. And you just say, don't do that again. What are you going to do? They're going to come back, grab more candy until there's some consequences. Till you ground him, which is the equivalent of keeping him in jail and or going to prison, you know, spanking them or whatever. I mean, you know, there's a progressive discipline and that's just not happening right now. And what the DA is sticking to his guns. I could see you have a vision for what you want to do, but then you have to reevaluate that and say, okay, what could I do differently? What could I change? But in today's like political atmosphere, there's a perception of like, he's flip-flopping now.
Right.
And so everyone sticks to their guns, like the headline says, instead of saying, no, I'm rethinking this. Let me change. Let me evaluate. That should be commended. But nowadays, it's really not.
I know. And I always thought that, too, about everything politically, too. Or even if you felt one way about the vaccine and then you changed your mind and you wanted to get the vaccine, and then people that were getting the vaccine and then their supporters would be like, how dare you? I'm like, the person decided to change their mind. Like, you can change your mind for whatever reasons. You can feel differently about something. Like, that's the whole point, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
critical
like
thinking.
Yeah. I mean,
I got new information and I'm going to change. I'm going to alter my tactics.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. It
but has
be
Gavin Newsom said anything? I feel like we haven't heard from him. Is he even around?
Isn't he on his book tour or something like that? Something crazy? Yeah.
I mean like, how is it that he's not doing a press conference and being like, this is, you know, or I guess it was him or someone said, well, you guys are on your phones too much and you're not paying attention. So you're like, you're getting robbed because you're like looking at your phone when you're crossing the street.
I mean, that's what they used to tell rape victims right back, you know, 20 years ago. Well, you're dressing provocatively. You should know better. You should dress, you know, dowdy. I mean, it's the same type of mentality. It doesn't fly for that. It shouldn't fly for that, for this, for you're on your phone. And sure, there are people that aren't cognizant of the surroundings. Yeah, but that's what we're left with. That's all. The only tactic you have is to blame the person on the phone. It's like, no, let's talk about the elephant in the room. All these people that are committing these crimes, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they'd be in jail, in prison right now. And just there's more of them out there. So now you're going to have more of those crimes.
And with your friend who's now the chief of Beverly Hills Police. So they added 5 more officers, which just sounds like nothing to me.
Right.
I'm like, how is that a big deal? Like 50, I would be like, awesome. 5,
yes.
I'm like, but obviously we want them to be prepared to be cops. We don't want to just like pick up kids off the football field and be like, hi, would you like to be a cop? I mean, we want like, you know, good cops.
Which has happened. It's led to scandals within police departments.
They've what?
Mass hiring when there's huge crime surges of mass hiring and lowering the standards.
Yeah.
And then you have crimes within police departments.
Right. We can't have that.
So it's that fine balance of you want people in, but you want high quality people.
Have they tried to recruit people from other states or areas?
All the time. That's how I came out here. I'm from New York City. I was recruited from out of state.
Now, how did you just put it out that you wanted to come here and then you get recruited? Like,
no, I heard it. They paid for advertising on the radio at the time.
So do you know if we're advertising in other places?
Oh, I have to.
Yeah.
If they just recruited from here, the pool is so small.
Oh.
And they have to go nationwide. And then there's a push to even confound that of all the social reform, which some of it's good, some of it's needed, some of it's not. It's insanity. There's a lot of push within cities to hire just people that live within the city, and which sounds great. You know, you want people that know the neighborhoods or whatever, but they don't have a huge pool.
Yeah, you got to do both.
Due to education, whatever, you know, criminal records, you know, there's a whole array of – so there's this constant push and pull of experimentation within the criminal justice field. But we're the ones that are being – we're the lab rats. People on the street, myself, that have to work here.
Yeah.
So it's horrible. You never want to be in the beginning of an experiment. Give me the tail end where, all right, yeah, everything's worked out, all the kinks. But we're in the middle of the messy part right now.
So when do we get to vote on these people again? Do you know?
Well, there's all these, like Newsom came up with all these recalls. It seems like that's another thing. Someone gets voted in, the next day there's a recall.
Right.
Like, you got to give some time. This is a process, you know, whatever the office is, 2 years, 4 years, what have you. Uh-huh. So I'm not a big fan of the recalls unless you're doing something disastrous where it's corrupt, immoral, unethical.
Yeah.
In the next election, you have to, you know, come up with a viable candidate. So with his office in particular, there's a lot of people that he alienated, like from day one, his employees. And so they have a lot of people within his office that are going to be running. So hopefully come up with a viable candidate to reverse all of this. And there is a recall that just started with him. But the last
Again?
One. Yeah, the last
a
one
that
happened, they didn't
they
didn't have the threshold to get it onto the ballot. So
Again,
everything has to be a disaster before people wake up like, oh, yeah, there's a problem here. You know, let me sign this. Let me vote.
So what is your advice to people that are living in L.A.? How to stay safe? What should they do? What should they not do? What can they do?
It's, you know, to stay educated, you know, through the media, but don't over-educate. Don't oversaturate. You got to find that balance of where the hot spots are, where's the friction. And then try to, you know, alter some of, like, when you are going to a high, high targeted area, you think, like, say, Neiman Marcus or whatever, a restaurant that's trendy. When you're going to and from, that's where you're vulnerable. When you're getting out of your car, when you're walking into your car. So if you're going home, if you live in a highly targeted area, go around the block a couple of times, maybe. You know, we in our community we call it surveillance detection routes. Don't blow lights, but drive in a way where you could see in a rearview mirror who's following you. Do that. Make it normal. Don't make it abnormal because then they're going to know, wow, this person's on to me. And then, which could be a good thing, but normally you just want to make it where it's someone you see them, and then don't go directly to your house if you feel that it's something's wrong.
Oh, yeah, this is terrifying. I can't. I'm like scared. I'm like imagining this now, and I'm like, I think I would just go straight to a police department if someone.
Well, yeah,
was following
if someone's actually, you do find out someone's following you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get that all the time. Hey, someone's following me. You're like, okay, drive to us. You know, we'll send somebody out, but drive to us. But you're gonna know. You're gonna have that feeling of someone's following me, and so be cognizant of that. So going to and from, just be very cognizant and act upon those feelings of intuition.
But then there was a couple that was just waiting for an Uber, and they were at the valet at a hotel, and the guy drove up and took all their stuff.
And yeah, and then there's those opportunities where, yeah, there's nothing you really could have done to mitigate that.
Do you think if you buy, like, the fake purses, you know, and someone tries to take your purse that you're like, excuse me, sir, this was only $150.
Yeah, this is from Santee Alley, not Rodeo. Yeah. Yeah, that's I mean, maybe.
No, I don't buy that either, though. Like,
Let it go.
I've been at those events. I'm never saying, you know, I haven't had one in my possession, but I will not buy anymore because that's the way they're made is, you know, sex trafficking and human trafficking and how these bags are made and everything. And then you're just adding to the hype of the label-y stuff.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, really, if I'm going to be robbed, I want to be robbed because I had the real thing.
Right.
Like, if I get robbed and go through that trauma because I got, like, some $112 purse at some purse party in a cul-de-sac, I'm going to feel like an idiot.
And if they're tagged on Instagram, maybe they'll compensate you with something equal or greater, maybe. You get the new brand coming out, 2022 joint.
Maybe. So, I don't know. God.
Which they should. I mean, you're high profile and you deserve it, so.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm not getting a gun. Anyone that's getting a gun, obviously, have your training. I really hope that we can get some more officers that are of your caliber, that are younger, that want to make this a career. And, you know, build some prisons. I don't know.
I mean,
change it or let the
so
older
many people,
people
ask
out.
Me, like,
what about letting the older people out? Like, what about letting these people that haven't, you know, it seems so hard once they get put away for like 20 years for selling pot, you know, it takes so long to get them out. I know, like, I think with Trump, there was a group of, you know, they kind of were like, okay, we can let these, you know, like, make it
Yeah, strategic.
Yeah,
be very
like
precise.
Who, yeah, what was this person in for? They've been really, even if it was a violent crime, if it was like, but they've been there for 12 years and they went to college and they have a family to go home to. They won't be on the streets. Like, I mean, they should look at each individual person and be like, this person is a low risk person to let out, you know?
Yes.
And then that's an open space for someone that's the career criminal.
Yes, but in government, everything's like broad strokes. Nothing's
right.
Very strategic. It's very just lambasted with a policy that's one size fits all. And that's humans aren't one size fits all.
Yeah.
But to go back to the purse thing, just remember it's a piece of cloth. It's a, whatever it is, a wallet, everything else.
Yeah.
But people, you know, your natural instinct as a human is to protect whatever is yours. So, which I understand, but it's that moment of that friction point. Where things get happened, where guy shoots himself, shoots you. We're not dealing with highly trained criminals out there, and people panic like anything else on both sides, victim or perpetrator.
Have you found that like the gun sales have gone way up?
Oh yeah, especially for women. I think women right now are the number one purchasers of firearms. Believe it or not, I mean, it's a huge surge in fire. I mean. At our police academy, we have a store that's open to the public as well. It looks like someone looted that place. There's nothing in stock. Everything's off the shelves. I went in the other day. I'm like, where's all the merchandise? There's like a two box limit on ammunition. So it's across the board, the nation in the last couple of years, it's been spiking. So it's America, we love our guns and Americans, unfortunately, we get scared very easily. And some of it's valid. I think most of it isn't.
Yeah.
And a lot of emotional-based decision-making. So, but if you do want to go shooting, I'll take you and Peter shooting any day.
I've only gone once when I lived in Brentwood, and I was awful at it. My sister was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was like, the thing came back, and mine was like, awful. And I felt that the gun was so incredibly heavy.
Yes.
That I was like, this is just not at all what I thought it was. Like, it was like, you know how they always go like that in the movies?
It looks sexier that way, right?
Yeah, why? And then why would you do like a somersault before you shoot someone? Isn't it better just to like walk a few feet?
Right.
Have you ever done a somersault to shoot someone?
No, but we have trained for it. I've done it a few times.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't look, it's not as sexy as it is in the movies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well.
But yeah, open invite to you guys. But it is serious business. Even purchasing a gun, it's like purchasing a car. It's like getting you in a monster truck just doesn't feel comfortable. Same thing with a weapon. You have to so much that goes into it.
One thing Peter was saying is like it should be like buying a car, and that you should have to have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, I think people would be more select and just like a car. People that you wouldn't have 15 guns.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just have the one.
Right.
You know, like, because you have to pay this fee every year. I think there's things like that, you know, that could make it safer.
And to know how to store it. You wouldn't just keep a car, a Ferrari in the street with the keys running, the keys in the ignition, let it run.
Yeah.
Where people will feel free to just keep weapons out in the open when they're gone. And
it's always the first thing to get stolen. I remember that in every robbery if someone has a gun.
Oh, yeah. It's a great commodity.
Yeah. Well, this was juicy, kind of depressing.
Yeah, we got to leave it on a good note. Got to leave it on a good note.
You are not only a cop. You do some interesting things, and you're always on all these podcasts, and you have your own podcast. So tell them where they can follow you.
My nickname on Instagram, at Knocko, KNOCKO. And on there is links to all the stuff that I like to have fun do on the side with podcasts like you. It's called the Armbar Podcast, and we discuss law enforcement, martial arts, military stuff, good things like that, resiliency and all that fun things. And yeah, just give me a follow. And if you need pointers on firearms and what have you, criminal stuff, more than happy to help. Always led a life of service. It's what I like to do. So that's why I'm here.
Until you retire.
No, I don't know if I'm going to ever retire.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, it's like saying I'm just never going to do anything.
I know.
Always going to be serving in some capacity, whether it's police department or
private
sector.
But you're not leaving the LAPD anytime soon.
No, I'm still having fun. I got a lot in the gas tank.
Sounds like a blast.
Yeah, sometimes literally, right?
Thank you. Well, you guys are so lucky. I have a whole nother interview. It's our girl, returning guest, Captain Sandy from Below Deck. Hello, and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I'm back with returning guest, everyone's favorite captain, Captain Sandy. Welcome back to Juicy Scoop.
Thanks for having me. I love following you on Instagram because I laugh. You are so funny.
Oh, you're so sweet. So you were just telling me you're getting ready to go skiing. You're going for New Year's Eve. Then what is this gay ski week you're doing, and you're judging what?
So every year they do, it's called Ski Week, and okay, it's Gay Ski Week in Aspen. And so they do this downhill drag ski race. And the last time they had the event, I was actually a judge with the mayor of Aspen and the sheriff. It was a full-on blizzard. We're all like, these people are stripped down, like they have their bathing suits on, and they race down the hill. It is the most fun experience I've ever had. And they have all these events, they raise money. So it's wonderful. So I'm going for the whole week. I'm doing something with Chase Bank, and then I'm going to be a judge. And I just show up and ski in between.
Oh my God. So has your life turned out to be a lot more fun than you ever expected?
You know, honestly, after I got sober, it did. Before that, it was a mess. But yes, in the last 32 years, my life is beyond my wildest dreams.
And were you in yachting before you were sober, or did that all come after?
I had to get a job to pay my fines because I was always in trouble. And I started washing boats, and that's where I learned about the industry. And then after I got sober was my first crew job on a boat.
Wow. And now it's been 32 years. Well, that was one of the questions we had. Is it ever hard being a sober person and having your knowledge when you have like such hardcore drinking happen with the guests?
I look at them and I go, I never want to be like that. So when I see people who are messes, like I just think, you know, some people just drink too much and they regret it the next day. I'm so grateful I don't wake up with a hangover or wondering what I did the night before. The other part is, yes, of course. Sometimes I think, can I just smoke a joint or have a drink or, you know, just to have that where you just unplug, you know, because that was always the departure for me is every time I would add alcohol or a drug, it was a departure from life and reality. And I can't do that anymore, which makes it harder. And then you got to work on your skill set to be more present to figure out how to navigate it.
And have, you know, with that kind of being the whole California sober thing, people talk about maybe they've been sober for 10, 20 years. And they're like, you know what? I allow myself to have a glass of wine, a joint. I mean, what is your opinion of that? I know everybody's different, but what's your thought about that kind of being this sort of new wave of people dealing with alcohol issues?
You know, honestly, that's their decision. Like I have no opinion. I know for me, why would I take the risk to try to find out if I can do it or not? I'm not willing to take the risk to find out because I love my life. I love who I am. I love being present in the moment. You know, so many people practice being present, right? So if we're always thinking about the future or the past, we're not. They always say you're peeing all over today. If you have one foot in the future, one foot in the past, you're just, where's today? So for me, the practice of being present in the present is something that I think most people want. And if I take a drink or a drug, I'm not going to be in the present any longer.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Now the show, how many seasons have you done as Captain Sandy on your show?
So I think five, right, Jen? Five, I think.
And I don't know if we talked about this last time you were on, but like, how did it come about? And did you ever think prior to filming the reality show Below Deck, did you ever just go, God, there should be cameras here right now? Because so many times people are like, why is there not a camera here? And then, you know, their life actually does become a reality show. Like, did it just come out of nowhere?
You know, Heather, I never really thought like that. In fact, I am a child spirit in this adult body. Ask any one of my family members or even Leah. She goes, that is so you. When it's like this moment of squirreling and being a kid, I never thought like that in a million years. I didn't see Below Deck. It fell in my lap. Like I always share people, I'm God friendly. I love God. Saved my life so many times. So the fact that Bravo's done an amazing thing by put this television show on air has helped so many people to show, hey, you can get this maritime industry. It actually is for people that, you know, have their life together or not, because you can definitely, it can change your life. So yeah, I didn't think about reality TV at all.
Who called you? Like, how did it come about? And did you have any doubts about going forward and doing it?
Monique Marvez, I met and knows our producer on the show. And they had dinner once and she goes, you know, I know a woman captain. That's how it came about.
Oh, okay. And then when they brought it to you, were you a fan of reality TV? Did you know how much you'd be actually exposing about your life?
I didn't watch television because I'm always at sea. I was a charter captain in the Mediterranean and we did back-to-back charters. And, you know, on my holidays, when I would get time off, I spent it with my families. I watched predominantly the news, very little television. I didn't know Bravo. I didn't know anything about reality TV. Well, I'm at sea. Ask any captain that's at sea. They're not watching television. In our free time, we're connecting with our friends when we can.
Do you know any other fellow captains that are like, yeah, I'd like to be on TV. Can I get a part of that? Like, is anyone like coming out being like, can I be on this show with you or have my own, you know, season or whatever?
You know, they don't reach out to me. Most people are afraid it'll ruin their career. I don't know why. I used to think that too. I was really reluctant about doing the show. Let's face it. It shows some stuff like, you know, that happens. And the last thing owners want is a captain that may spill the beans or spill the tea, as Bravo says. So yeah. I don't know, you know, no one's reached out to me because I think they're, you know, it's a professional career. It's not something that's, you know, we have fun in our career, but no one's reached out to me, but I'm sure there are probably captains out there that would do it. I think it's a great thing. I'm grateful I said yes. I said yes because it landed in my lap. And I had so many people share with me, don't do the show. Don't do the show. It's going to ruin your career. It's the exact opposite. It's actually helped people show people that, hey, there's jobs in this maritime industry, not so much television, because beyond TV, I'm still a captain, right?
Right.
TV will end someday for all of us, right? So beyond that, I still have a skill set that I can go out and navigate. I just can't, you know, blow it by doing something wrong, especially on camera, you know.
Like. Which is interesting because so many reality stars that have been on shows for years, you know, maybe grow out of their job, like Vanderpump Rules, you know, they're older, they're stars, they don't have to wait tables anymore. But then if the show was to end, what do those people do? And I just thought about it, including Housewives too, you really are like the only show that you have like a really viable skill to do after if the show was ever to end.
That is $1 million listing. Yeah. There are a few shows that are actually trades because they're not, you know, something you go to college for, which is really great because in today's world, we need more trades people.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
In my industry.
What, speaking of which, like when you have a crew, whether it's being filmed or not, you know, there's always these romances that happen every time. Sometimes they turn out great. Sometimes they're disastrous. At this point in your career, as the crew comes together, have you ever been like, you know what? I bet those two hook up. Like, are you ever betting on it? Or are you ever like, beyond my wildest dreams, I would never think these two would fall in love?
Well, beyond my wildest dreams thought that, but usually I can tell, but I don't really think about the crew. I think about my job. I honestly don't think about the crew only if they're doing their job. And then I think, oh my God, that's great. I'm here to support you. Or, oh my God, you totally screwed up. Now I got to, you know, figure this out. I don't think about their romantic lives. I actually have had crew that who are very successful at, they met on board. I ran a boat called Tuscan Sun. This one particular couple, they fell in love. They left yachting. And their marriage is very successful today. They live in Melbourne. I have a few people like that. I had one couple who got engaged on board, who stayed on in yachting, and they never married. So it is difficult to do that when you're on a boat. If you really want to have a successful relationship, you have to get off a boat, because there's it's impossible to think you're going to stay together on board. It doesn't work unless it's a captain and a chief stew and they go on smaller boats and they work it out that way. But would you want to work with your spouse and live together?
I do. I do live with my spouse and work together.
Okay. Well, you're a success.
No, you know what it is though? Everyone that works with their spouse will say there's the best and the worst of it. The best is that you really can be more successful because you really have each other's back and you're in it for life. And like, you know, you protect each other. The other part is it's just annoying and you're like too much together time, go away. So, you know, there's definitely pluses and minuses to it. What's your proudest moment of doing what you do?
On a yacht is when I help a crew member in their career or in their life. Like I've helped crew members that were messes that said, you have two choices. You can either get clean or you get fired, you know, and that those people are still clean today. And the other side is the people who are becoming captains, you know, when Wes is, you know, from my first season, I always think my first season is my most memorable season because that was my first time on television. And Wes, Max, you know, Max couldn't tie a line. He's been a bosun. He's actually a first officer. He's been working on boats since the show. That's 5 years, you know? So it's like those moments in time where you're able to shift someone's, I don't know, life in a great way. And that's really, those are my most proudest moments. If, you know, now and today, Malia, inspiring her and watching her grow and so many others, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, I get this opportunity to be next to these young kids or young adults and watch them in life, but also be an example of what you can become. Because, hey, even though it's a television show, it's a real career. It's a real career where you're shoulder to shoulder next to billionaires. And these people who, I don't know, like I learned so much from the people I worked for. Jim Herbert, founder of First Republic Bank, Mark Loverbaum. You know, all these people I've worked for who are very, very successful in life, but also went through, it's like a wave, right? I always talk to people, life is like a wave in your career or in your life. You're up on top of the wave, but then you have the trough, right? Where you go down. Sometimes it's slow. It depends on the seconds of the wave. And then you come back up. It's a climb, right? And then you're back on top of the wave. That's, to me, that's in career and in life. And I share that with the crew. And when I watch them grow, that's fulfilling for me.
Have you ever had a guest and then they come back around and you're just like, I can't, they're just so gross and despicable. Can you find another captain? Have you ever refused a return guest on your boat?
I had one charter client who was really disrespectful to the crew. I called his broker and told on him. I actually had two. I had one that was swearing at the people in Porto Cervo. And I knew coming from our boat, we would be blacklisted from Porto Cervo. They don't care. It's the boat name. It's not the client. And I called and told on them as well. And I just call the broker and say, get your client under control or he gets off the dock. He's off the boat on the dock at this location. So they'll call their client. And it's not my job because they're making all this, you know, that's their client. They call them right away and say, you need to stop because the captain, you will be removed off the boat, lose all your money and your trip's done. So I have those moments, but I don't go up to them. I actually had a €1 million charter. I went up to the client and I said, hey, her guests were really rude to the crew. And I said, you know, these people aren't flunkies in life. They're here to serve you. They're here. You know, when you're appreciative, your guests are appreciative. It makes them want to do more for you. And your guests are just really not very nice to my crew. And I'm having their back. I had an attorney as a stewardess who just wanted to get on a boat for a year. I said, they are college graduates that decided not to do their careers. And it turned around. They gave us a €100,000 tip. It was incredible.
And did you, in doing this, have you ever had somebody be like, I don't want the crew to look me in the eye?
Yes.
Or anything? You have?
Yeah, but you know why? Because a lot of, besides from the show, most crew in the world of yachting know how to read clients. You read the room, right? You walk in a room, you read the room. Do I look them in the eye? You know, or do I not? Do I speak to the captain to look them in the eye? So sometimes I look them in the eye, but they may not want my crew to look them in the eye. You know what I mean? So I've had those charters where I'm the person who addressed the client, not the crew.
I just think that not looking in the eye is just so telling of that person that requests that. Like, why would you want the people that are serving you to be quote unquote invisible? Like,
because
it's really gross.
Cultures are different, right? So you have to adjust to the cultures where you are. Like, you know, so many times you go to a foreign country and you visit a place, it's the job of that country to make their people comfortable, not us, not the visitor. And I always say that we're a floating country. It is our job to make them feel comfortable. It's not their job to make us feel comfortable. That's the difference. And that's where the professionalism comes in, because it's not personal, it's their culture.
So when you talk about these tips that I love on the show, and my kids and I will pause it and we'll like guess what the tip is. And I'm usually right. But anyway, do you ever get to partake, whether on TV or not, in the tip as the captain?
Oh, yeah. We split it evenly. So,
I think people always thought that the captain didn't get any tip.
No, we do. And, you know, apart from the show, a lot of captains back in the day would keep a percentage and, you know, give the crew what they felt was they should get. It was never split evenly. There are some captains who have always done that. I did. I always dump the money on the ground or on the table and go, let's count it, you know, because it's fun. When I was a captain, when we had the 100,000 euros, we dumped all that money on the table and we counted it together. And, you know, that's the crazy part. It's a gratuity. It's not expected. And so when 2008 hit, the gratuity was reduced. So many people were upset, but we're here.
Why was it reduced in 2008?
The crash.
Oh, just the market. It went down. Yeah. I thought you meant there was like some law or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The market determines the tip, right? So the market determines if people are chartering, you know, so many people were reducing their rate. We gave fuel credits, you know, we did everything to get people on board. Now, since COVID, our industry's blown up beyond. It's crazy because I think all these parents are spending their college fund for their kids and going chartering yachts. Like, screw this, I'm in, you know.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's time to enjoy life for sure for everyone. You never know if tomorrow's going to be the last day. But, you know, I always think it's so interesting, like, so before the show, because I was like, is this for the show that they have to present the tip in cash? So that means like as they get on board, they better have enough cash to give the tip that they may want at the end. I mean, that seems like kind of like a huge pain in the ass and kind of unsafe.
That's not how it works. They in the charter world, we have an APA, which is provisioning allowance, right? So there's cash on board. So we have cash so we can pay for things. It's always a percentage of the charter. If we don't use all that APA money, that usually gets left for the boat. Sometimes it's not enough. And then the person will wire the money.
It's a little
different how we do it. Times it's the leftover cash on board. I remember once, I totally forgot. I am outing myself right now. I had a charter. And I was like, man, we got a lot of cash. I forgot to pay for the fuel, 57,000 euros. And I was like, whoa. But I was so tired. I went, oh my God. And I had already given out the money. I couldn't ask the crew for the money back.
So what did you do?
I called the owner and I said, I need to get fuel. So I fueled the boat. I totally messed up.
Wow.
I need to get fuel. And he goes, yeah, go ahead. So I filled the boat up.
But he never figured out that you had like miscalculated something.
You know, I did, you know, when I saw him in person, I go, you know, I made a mistake. And he goes, yeah, it's fine. He goes, I knew that. They're not stupid. Okay.
Wow. So what's your biggest regret as a captain, either on TV or not?
My biggest regret. I guess not really pursuing the larger vessels when I was, you know, younger, you know, because in the women world of captaining, my friend Vicky, we all wanted to run a Lursen. There's never really, they're the, like the Mac Daddy of boats, right? Fed ship, Lursen. Vicky, she ran an Amels and a Fed ship. She ran Paul Allen's boat, Meduse. And I remember watching her. She was my mentor. She didn't even know she was. And I watched her drive out Paul Allen's boat, Meduse, massive 242 footer out of Monaco and into Antibes. I was so proud. The fact that I didn't pursue that, I just, sometimes you get comfortable and you stay, but looking back, I'm like, why didn't I go bigger? But I'm grateful for this, where I am today, but that's my one regret.
Yeah. Cause on your Instagram, you feature these gorgeous photos of these massive boats that I'm like, God, I can't even believe this thing exists. Like, this is crazy that this is like not an actual cruise ship. It's so big.
Right. And they're only allowed to have 12 guests. Every one of those boats for charter can only have 12 guests.
Why is that?
Because it's a law, because then you become a passenger ship.
Oh, interesting. Uh-huh. I did not know that. And then, okay, so let me see. What else. So
well,
what would be
for hire, shall I say? If the owner has a party, if he has, you know, 27 cabins, he can fill those cabins. But if someone's a paying charter, you can only have 12.
Have you ever had someone fall off the boat while it was moving?
No. Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, that just happened just the other day. So sad.
Yes.
On a Carnival cruise in Mexico.
Well, and cruise ships, yes. But I am not on a yacht. I hear that all the time on cruise ships.
And I'm so fascinated by that because I was recently on a cruise and I had the chance to go like where the captain is and everything. And that's what I asked. And then they were like, we know right away because we have the cameras everywhere. And with this woman that just, you know, they saw her go over, but then they couldn't find her. And, you know, I mean, I just imagine it would be very hard, especially if it's at night.
You know, I wonder, a lot of people do jump overboard. You know, there's a fight. I you know, a lot of times alcohol is involved. In fact, I just did the, I just was a part of the American Cancer Society fundraiser in Fort Lauderdale. And I met the CEO of Celebrity Cruise Lines. What a lovely human being. You know, what was really cool about that event? There were other ship representatives there in that market. They put their competitive spirit aside and they all came together to raise money to help solve the cancer issue. And, you know, I always hear these stories, what happens on cruise ship, but when you're intimate with these people one-on-one, you're just like, wow, it's, you know, it's an industry. It's an incredible industry. Things happen. I've heard horror stories about, you know, people being pushed overboard or jumping overboard. But at the end of the day, we're all people just trying to navigate this crazy world. And it's not the cruise ship's fault. Someone decides to jump overboard. And again, that, guess who's responsible for that person going overboard? The captain of that cruise ship.
You know, and nobody ever talks about the other good stories. Like when I was on the Virgin cruise ship and I was talking to he wasn't the captain. He was maybe, I don't know, one of the main people. And I was asking these questions and he goes, but we've rescued people too. I go, what do you mean? And he's like, we were out and there was just this guy alone on like a catamaran type of boat that had been gone out by himself, been out there for days. Something happened. He was stuck there. And he was just so incredibly grateful, you know, so they stop the boat, they go out and rescue him. They bring him on their boat. He just let his boat go. He's like, it was damaged or I don't know what. He just like let his $300,000 boat go. And he was so incredibly grateful. And I'm like, you never hear about those stories, like of rescuing somebody.
Yes, I know. I have a friend that went over, their boat sank during a hurricane and they were rescued by a Canadian ship. You know, I'm like, what were you doing out in a hurricane? And, you know, it's like,
and going out alone too.
She's been in five lifeboats. And I'm like, remind me never to get on a boat with you.
Your friend was rescued
5 times. I'm like, what is going on? Like, it's crazy.
Wow. That is kind of crazy. So how are you friendly with Captain Lee, right? These things.
So Yeah, of course. Like, but we're not in the same circles. Like, we're very different people in life. You know, I don't, you know, even Captain Glenn, I've never met him in person. Great guy, that what I've heard of, but I mean, I, you know, we're different people in different parts of the planet, but yeah, no, I don't have, I'm friendly with everybody.
But what I like about the three different series, from the sailing with Captain Glenn to Captain Lee, is that you guys are all very different and different how you run your cruise. You know, Captain Lee is just such a character, you know, and I mean, it's almost like, I can't believe he wasn't like, you know, it's like, you can't believe he's a real person, you know, with all his like funny little sayings and the way he looks. And then, and the way he handles his crew and his like tough exterior. And then there's you, who definitely you see all the times that you've like really, maybe, you know, it's your personality, but also just, I think just being a female, that you like really are encouraging the crew to you know, you're like, you're going to dock it. You're going to do this. You're going to, I'm going to give you this opportunity. And even like with all the different chefs, like, really giving the compliments and that kind of thing. I don't think, no offense to them, but I don't think we see that as a viewer as much. And I think that's kind of cool to see the three different ships and how they're run.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's being a woman. I think we're more compassionate. We have a different way of looking at things.
Yeah.
You know, I worked for the founder of First Republic Bank, and he goes, I will always have a woman partner, because he felt like men bring something that women can't, and women bring something that men can't, which make it really yin and yang. And I always love that about him. And I always think about that. That's why usually I have a first officer that's a guy, because I like the balance. You know, the bosun could be a woman. Like, I like to have, if you have 12 crew, I would try to have 6 women and 6 men.
Yeah. And did you ever see when on the sailing one, when they crashed into the dock? Did you ever see that clip?
Yeah, but that was a malfunction. Like, he had a, hey, listen, you know, things happen. I mean, you know, I've heard stories, thank God. Like, I, on my own boat, I ran aground, you know, was like talking to my friend, not anyone else's, but a 72 foot mangoose, and I'm with my friend and we're talking, and I'm delivering back from the Northeast of South Florida. And there's a 90 degree turn in Titusville off the intercoastal. All I was like, da, 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 da. And I was like, whoop. And it was mud. And I was like, you know, what's great about this boat? It has Arneson drives, which I pulled them up. And I just cleaned the bottom of the boat. It was hilarious. And I said, what happens on the boat stays on the boat.
Yeah. Because I mean, that scene I thought was like, we went back and rewatched it so many times, my family, because my husband just got his quote unquote captain's, you know, so we can take like a monorail or a catamaran out without anybody. And I joke, I'm like, now I'm going to be an episode on Dateline, because we're going to be that couple that just goes by ourselves. And
yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, I want you wearing a life jacket if you're going to have drinks, because I don't want you to go missing and then I'm, you know, going to jail for what you for something I didn't do. And I'm like, well, I'm fine with you going to jail for something you didn't do. But
that's right. If you buy a boat, I was at the boat show. This guy bought a boat, and he goes, we're going to the Bahamas. It was a little boat, and I go, promise me, you'll get a lesson, you'll take a captain, and if you don't, you know, do a departure with the Coast Guard, you know. It's like, you can file with the Coast Guard what time you're leaving the dock and when you're supposed to be at your destination. If you don't report back to the Coast Guard, they'll send a search party.
Oh, that's good to know. Thanks for that tip. Yeah. I definitely want to know about that. So what, and now you're going off and you're doing some different things. Are you still doing your like speaking tour?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I do a lot of corporate speaking. The live show, a lot of people are canceling the venues. I'm not sure why. It could be the COVID variant. I don't know. I'm not in control of that. But for me, I just do a lot of corporate speaking. If these cities are able to continue, then yeah, I'll show up. And I'm just sharing who I am as a person, how I got to where I am, and offering up the maritime connection. You know, basically it's to help the audience say, hey, if you have kids, you know, children, and they're not going to college, or maybe you're stuck in life and you want to change careers, making that connection with the maritime industry. Now, next year, I plan to do something completely different where I infuse music, because I use music. How many times have you played a song that's changed your mindset? Like I, the importance of music. And I always talk about that because every time, even when you watch the TV show, if I'm in my cabin, I'm not sleeping. I have music on, headphones in, because we can't play the music because obviously for obvious reasons. So that changes how I come out of my cabin. When I do a lot of corporate events and I speak, I always share this, like how you leave your house. If you just had a massive fight with your kid and you want to kick them out of your car when you drop them off at school, is how you show up at work. That permeates through your corporation, right? You bring that energy. How do you change that energy? And I say, play a song that changes that mindset before you get out of your car and walk into that workspace.
Well, when like the crew, like on the show, when they have that like 2-day break and then they go and, oh, I've got you a beach day or I got you a fancy dinner, and they booze it up so hardcore. Like how hard is it for them to wake up the next day and then just start scrubbing the deck? Cause that just like sounds like hell.
You know, I don't know. I know for me, it would be really hard. That's on them. Like, I have no idea. I'm sure it's not easy. I know for me, it wasn't, you know, but I think sweating it out on deck kind of like gets rid of all that stuff in your body. So I never really ask, as long as they do their job.
Do you have like a dream crew that would maybe that you could steal somebody from Captain Lee, somebody from your,
whoever's on the boat, I'm great. You know, whoever I end up with is who I'm supposed to be with.
Well, I love it. Well, I'm really excited. When's the next, like what's coming up next for us to watch?
Well, keep an eye out on January. I'm going to announce something.
Okay, cool.
Something big.
Something big.
Something big.
Well, I'm excited about that. And thank you so much. And everybody follow Kat. What is your Instagram?
So Captain Sandra Yon, but my website's CaptainSandyYon.com, and that has everything on it.
Yeah. And I do think it's a great alternative career to do and pursue, and, you know, and what a great, you know, it could be your career or it could be this little fun, exciting interim. And I think that's what has been great about the show. It's like this whole other career I don't think people thought of that just actually works out perfectly for a lot of people from all over the world.
Yeah, because there's sales, you could be a naval architect, there's designers, and you know, if you love decorating and designing, there's so many aspects besides being on a boat. You know, the marine trade industry is massive. They do this conference every year, this gathering in Amsterdam. It's called METS. It's the largest trade gathering in the world. And it's thousands and thousands of people. It's incredible.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sandy.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely.
Keep doing what you do because you make me smile every time I watch.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much.